Chapter 33. The following day began with a drizzle, but cleared up after lunch. Lucette had her last piano lesson with gloomy Herr Rock. The repetitive tinkle-thump-tinkle reached Van and Ada during a reconnaissance in a second-floor passage. Mademoiselle La Riviere was in the garden. Marina had fluttered away to Lador, and Van suggested they take advantage of Lucette's being audibly absent by taking refuge in an upstairs dressing room. Lucette's first tricycle stood there in a corner. A shelf above a cretonne-covered divan held some of the child's old untouchable treasures, among which was the battered anthology he had given her 4 years ago. The door could not be locked, but Van was impatient, and the music would surely endure, as firm as a wall, for at least another 20 minutes. He had buried his mouth in Ada's nuque when she stiffened and raised a warning finger. Heavy, slow steps were coming up the grand staircase.
"Send him away," she muttered.
"Chort!"
"Hell," swore Van, adjusting his clothes, and went out on the landing. Philip Rock was trudging up, Adam's apple bobbing, ill-shaven, livid, gums exposed, one hand on his chest, the other clutching a roll of pink paper while the music continued to play on its own, as if by some mechanical device.
"There's one downstairs in the hall," said Van, assuming, or feigning to assume, that the unfortunate fellow had stomach cramps or nausea. But Mr. Rock only wanted to make his farewells to Ivan Demanovich, accented miserably on the second O, to Fräulein Ada, to Mademoiselle Ida, and, of course, to Madame. Alas, Van's cousin and aunt were in town, but Phil might certainly find his friend Ida riding in the rose garden. Was Van sure? Van was damned well sure. Mr. Rock shook Van's hand with a deep sigh, looked up, looked down, tapped the banisters with his mysterious pink paper tube, and went back to the music room, where Mozart had begun to falter. Van waited for a moment, listening and grimacing involuntarily, and presently rejoined Ada. She sat with a book in her lap.
"I must wash my right hand before I touch you or anything," he said. She was not really reading, but nervously, angrily, absently, flipping through the pages of what happened to be that old anthology. She, who at any time, if she picked up a book, would at once get engrossed in whatever text she happened to slip into, from the book's brink, with the natural movement of a water creature put back into its brook. "I have never clasped a wetter, limper, nastier forelimb in all my life," said Vaughn, and cursing, the music downstairs had stopped, went to the nursery WC, where there was a tap. From its window, he saw Rock put his lumpy black briefcase into the front basket of his bicycle and weave away, taking his hat off to an unresponsive gardener. The clumsy cyclist's balance did not survive his futile gesture. He brushed harshly against the hedge on the other side of the path and crashed. For a moment or two, Rock remained in tangled communion with the privet, and Van wondered if he should not go down to his aid. The gardener had turned his back on the sick or drunken musician who, thank goodness, was now getting out of the bushes and replacing his briefcase in its basket. He rode away slowly, and a surge of obscure disgust made Van spit into the toilet bowl. Ada had left the dressing room by the time he returned. He discovered her on a balcony where she was peeling an apple for Lucette. The kind pianist would always bring her an apple, or sometimes an inedible pear, or two small plums. Anyway, that was his last gift.
"Mademoiselle is calling you," said Van to Lucette.
"Well, she'll have to wait," said Ada, leisurely continuing her ideal peel, a yellow-red spiral which Lucette watched with ritual fascination.
"Have some work to do," Van blurted out. "Bored beyond words. She'll be in the library."
"Okay,"
limpidly responded Lucette without turning, and emitted a cry of pleasure as she caught the finished festoons. He spent half an hour seeking a book he had put back in the wrong place.
When he found it at last, he saw he had finished annotating it and so did not need it anymore. For a while he lay on the black divan, but that seemed only to increase the pressure of passionate obsession. He decided to return to the upper floor by the cochlea. There, he recalled with anguish, as something fantastically ravishing and hopelessly irretrievable, her hurrying up with her candlestick on the night of the burning barn, capitalized in his memory forever. He, with his dancing light behind her, herdies and calves and mobile shoulders and streaming hair, and the shadows in huge surges of black geometry overtaking them in their winding upward course along the yellow wall. He now found the third floor door latched on the other side and had to return down to the library, memories now blotted out by trivial exasperation, and take the grand staircase. As he advanced toward the bright sun of the balcony door, he heard Ada explaining something to Lucette. It was something amusing. It had to do with, I do not remember and cannot invent. Ada had a way of hastening to finish a sentence before mirth overtook her, but sometimes, as now, a brief burst of it would cause her words to explode, and then she would catch up with them and conclude the phrase with still greater haste, keeping her mirth at bay, and the last word would be followed by a triple ripple of sonorous, throaty, erotic, and rather cozy laughter. And now, my sweet, she added, kissing Lucette on her dimpled cheek, do me a favor. Rush down and tell Bad Bell it's high time you had your milk and petit beurre. J'y vais, quick. Meanwhile, Van and I will retire to the bathroom or somewhere where there's a good glass, and I'll give him a haircut. He needs one badly. Don't you, Van? Oh, I know where we'll go. Run along, Lucette.